Hello and welcome to Horrorspiria. My name is May.
And I'm Clinton. And thank you so much for joining us today. You are here and we are here for the season premiere of season two.
Yes.
We made it.
We did make it. We had such a good first season. We did 13 episodes,
wow,
I think.
Wow, that's a lot. Is that true?
Yeah, we had 9 official episodes, and okay, then we had about 4 bonus pods.
Huh, wow. Yeah. That's some content right there.
It is some content, and the last time we did this, it was June. Darko had just died. I was not in a good place. And then we kind of took the summer to just be people.
Yes. Recalibrate. After our life of celebrity and fast lane living.
We both went out of the country. Right?
You go first. I don't think I went out of the country.
I went to Canada.
Officially. Oh, you went to Canada? Yeah, you went to Canada.
Yeah.
I went nowhere. Thanks.
Spain was before.
I did go to Spain. Yeah, but that was... Well, I don't even remember that.
That was in May?
Something. Oh. May, maybe? Yeah.
The fall in May.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So you went to Canada. Do you want to tell what happened in Canada?
I saw my favorite band, The Killers, and it was incredible. I had never thought I would ever go to Canada, let alone drive. So I drove through like the East Midwest, eastern part of the Midwest. And that was fun. That was a lot of fun. We've seen a lot of movies together.
We have. Well, once backing up about Canada, did you hear some French along your travels?
I saw some signs in French, and that was a bit like interesting. Mm-hmm. But not as much as you would expect. But with Justin Trudeau's blackface scandal.
Jumping into today's news.
I've been noticing like so many Canadian outlets do their interviews in French, and he would like switch off, and that freaks me out.
Switch off French?
Like, yeah, like he would speak to someone in English and the uh-huh. next sentence would be in French, and I'd be like, man, Canada's weird.
Yeah.
But Canada was one of the best places I've ever been to. I really want to go to Toronto. We went to Windsor, and Canadians are so funny because they're like, Windsor is not a good area. And I was like, okay, all right, I guess thanks for warning me. And you go to Windsor, and I think what Canadians think by not a good area is that there's nothing to do, because it's just like dive bars and then the Caesars Casino. So there's a Caesars, like the one in Vegas, uh-huh. and Windsor. And Windsor's just really apparently known for people in Detroit to hop over the river and go to the casino and gamble and weed.
So you're into that shit. I mean, you're an academic, but you're
also... Can you calm down?
Yeah, you're into that. Season 2, filters off.
It was honestly really awesome. I really, really enjoyed Canada. Canada was super great. And we've had a lot of fun watching a lot of movies together.
We have. And actually, before our break for the season, I saw a Canadian movie on your
We were going to do a queer horror episode, which we'll probably still do.
It's the long lost episode.
It is the long lost episode. But yeah.
So yeah, there is, and maybe even do a Canada episode. We talked about doing
We've represented Canada a few times with The Brood and Ginger Snaps. Yeah, Canada, Toronto. That's why I want to visit Toronto. Toronto has a really strong horror community. A lot of our friends that we've even met online are from Toronto. Through the horror connection. So for real, we love Canada here.
Cool.
Pro Canada podcast.
Yeah, all right.
F Justin Trudeau though.
Yeah, now he fucked
Don't
up.
Vote conservative, but F Justin Trudeau.
All right. I like that.
Yeah, and what about you? I feel like I've just been...
Yeah, well, so my big life news is that I've been living in DC for 11, 12 years, something like that, and I finally did what I never thought I'd be able to do, which is move in on my own. So I no longer have 3 roommates.
Let's hold for a now pause. Great,
thank you.
Great.
And yeah, so now I live in a apartment, and the only reason I could afford it is because it's a cooperative. So in the 70s, the owners of the apartment tried to kick everybody out, and they all rebelled and And I get to benefit from that.
So that's great.
Feels good to, you know, kind of get to live your values a little bit.
Yeah.
And feel like you're cheating the system. And
yeah. The cis white male wins again.
Well, hey, It does open, well, yeah, it's a great,
no, that's great thing. Great.
And I
it's
encourage everyone to co-op, yeah. Kick out your landlords and make it your own.
Yeah, his place is really cute. It's in a really nice part of DC. I also moved. Last time we did this, I hadn't moved yet.
We're in the new studio.
Yeah, we're in the new studio. We're technically a new studio. Great neighbors. Sparrow is 3 times the size
and he now was. Sparrow, for those who maybe forget or
Sparrow's my
last,
new cat. Yes.
And he's a big boy now.
He's a really big boy.
He started out a small little fella. Yeah. And he grew. He grew.
Congrats.
He grew into his features, I think.
Yeah.
People used to say that about me. So I think
I think you're still growing into that.
Thank you. That could be a compliment.
All right.
I'd rather than a withering flower. I'd rather be on the upswing.
I'm the withering flower. No, and school started.
Yes.
So classes are going great. Maybe my students will be listening to this. So students, if you're listening, hey guys. You guys are awesome. I teach at Catholic University and George Mason now. So it's been really good getting back into it. And I also teach video production now. So I'm teaching them audition. So it's really fun to...
Audition is a computer program?
Yeah, the one that we're using right now to record.
Plug. Is Anchor going to be mad about this?
Yeah, Anchor, can you please get us in touch with Adobe? Right. No, but it's been really good so far, and I'm so glad to start a new season with you.
Yeah.
We're gonna try some new stuff, and we thought, you know, season 2 premiere, we want to kind of do something to bring everyone back. And one thing that we haven't done yet is really kind of done like a top 10 kind of thing. We usually talk about themes and stuff like that. But it's about to be October. This will probably be released the first or second week of October. And we think it's time to do some top 10 favorites.
Whoa, yeah. So today we're going to each share our top 5 favorite international horror movies.
Exactly. So we're focusing on international for the international podcast. We probably will do an American one next.
Okay.
But we want to give some representation out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's kind of our whole deal, you know?
Yes, absolutely. So how did you decide for yours?
So what I did was, I think you've seen more movies than me. So I started with the movies that I've watched for this podcast.
Fair.
And I wrote them all down. And that was fun and a fun experience on its own.
Okay.
And then I went through the list and there are a couple movies that I didn't include because they weren't horror enough for what I wanted to be the top. My top 5 list is, they have to be closer to horror. I'll just say the one I left off the list.
Okay.
The Host.
Really?
Yes. Because to me, that is more monster movie, and it's a little closer to like more like Godzilla than Friday the 13th.
That's fair. You'll probably be disappointed by one of my choices.
Yeah. I also break my own rules with one of these, but that's my thought process.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's fair. You're trying.
I'm trying. What did you do? How did you do yours?
So I actually wanted to do films that we hadn't talked about yet, because we've already talked about quite a few of my ultimates. Like A Tale of Two Sisters is definitely my favorite.
So you didn't put that one on the list?
I didn't, because I already did a bonus pod on it. But the thing is, when you tell people that you're a genre specialist, the thing that they love to focus on is always, what's your favorite horror movie? What's your favorite horror movie? I'm so sick. of that.
So you don't, right. Okay, so you want to give people some gems.
Yeah, because every single time someone asks me that, I literally tell them, well, you know.
Because then you just say the same thing.
Yeah, right? And it's a question I get so often. So I usually tell them.
Pretty famous.
It depends on my mood, right? Yeah. No, it does. So I chose, a lot of these are definitely some of my tops. But I also try to choose things that I don't think get enough love. And sometimes, especially with our movies, we go by themes. Like, for example, one of these films I wanted to talk about for giallos, but it technically isn't a giallo. I would have just introduced it as giallo adjacent. So I'm just really excited to talk about a whole bunch of different films.
Cool.
Kind of get us back in our groove.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's spooky season.
It is. Here in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, it's summer feeling.
We've had
a long summer.
Clinton says that, but Clinton doesn't remember that I'm from a tropical area.
I don't remember. Where are you from?
And this is already cooling down for me. Like, it's still 90 back home. So, I don't know. In Puerto Rico?
Or in Florida?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, it's still really sticky up there. It usually doesn't cool down to the 70s until Halloween. That was always the litmus point because I would always like to wear Halloween costumes, but Halloween costumes tend to be really cheap and thin, right?
Yeah.
And then, there's always like, how do you dress appropriately?
Has May ever wondered that to herself?
Oh my God. These people only know me via pod. Oh, we do want to mention something as well. Since the summer, we've been able to attract a lot of new listeners and we've gotten some feedback. So I want to give one shout out, a very special shout out to Charlie Hanning. He sent us an email saying that our pod on German Expressionism helped him with a project that he had. And as a teacher, that makes me so happy, especially when I'm talking to my kids and I'm like, did you guys listen to the podcast about this topic? And they're like, no.
They're like, oh, they just straight up say no. They won't even give you the like, oh.
No, they don't psych me out.
Like,
but
it just might be like the modern day equivalent of like, have you listened to my mixtape kind of thing, you know? Like,
I think that's a fair point. But either way, Charlie, good to hear from you.
Yeah, good man. Thank you for sending us some love.
Yeah, absolutely. So don't forget, we do have a website. We love getting mail. We love sending things back. We like collaborating too. If you're a horror person and you think you have an idea, hit us up. Season 2, we want to do more interactive things, fun things, and still keep our same vibe. So it's been a great start, and I feel really blessed to do this with you.
All right, awesome. I'm excited to hear your top five.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to play a supercut of all of our favorites together to kind of give everyone a taste, and then we're just going to get right into it, right?
Cool. So yeah, the listener, you can kind of see if you can guess any of these movies coming up here and maybe, you know, who you think might have it on their list.
Yeah, that would actually be really fun.
That could be cool.
Okay, so let's start.
Please,
So, one more note. My top five is in order. So I'm going to give you my number five first. This is at the bottom of the list.
Okay. I'll try and do the same, but I may not. I don't know.
Okay. So yours will be, you'll let us know. For number five, you're going to hate this, but it's Sangre Eterna.
Sangre Eterna as your number
Eternal
five?
Blood by Jorge Alguin.
Alguin?
Alguin.
See.
In 2002. This movie is currently sitting at a 4.4 stars rating out of 10 stars on IMDb's user whatever critic rating, whatever that is.
Who even votes on those?
There's a whole culture, there's a whole movement. They'll probably be in Horseberia. Don't give us a 4.4 out of 10. But
not on IMDb.
That's true. But we talk about movies. I looking back, I had a lot of fun watching this movie twice. I think this movie is, to do a quick review, I'm going to try to summarize it off the top of my head. I've only seen this movie twice.
Only.
So, Chilean goth Matrix era teenagers. Playing role-playing games and just getting a little too deep into goth culture.
Clinton really likes games, though. I think he's probably like projecting. Some of
Fair.
This is conjecture.
I do like games. I also don't like games in movies. I don't like that crossover. But this movie is fun. It's campy. It's got so much flavor. So much. It's a time capsule of a period in time.
It's definitely a time capsule. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Which makes it timeless, right? I mean,
does it? How do you feel about The Craft?
Oh, you know, I haven't seen it in so long, but timeless. Sure.
Okay, fair.
Yeah. So soundtrack great.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess I just had a lot of fun with it. I would watch it again. Definitely, it's a beers movie kind of experience.
Like a drinking game movie.
Possibly a drinking game movie.
You need to watch it in Spanish.
I did.
You didn't watch it in Spanish.
I didn't. That's right. I forget because
we found it in Spanish. It just doesn't have subtitles. I think you could survive.
That's true.
Especially now that you know the story.
Right. Now that I know the story.
It would be kind of like a test of your comprehension skills.
That's for sure. Yeah. I'd probably miss some, but I've already seen it twice. So like, how much could you miss? What did you think of Sangre Eterna? I kind of know what you think. Never mind.
Like,
I don't want to care what you think.
It's, you know, I think it's a really fascinating cultural study. Like, we haven't done Latin American horror in my class yet, but I'm going to show them Sangre Eterna because I think it definitely has a lot of merit for the Latin American movement, especially when there's not so many examples of Latin American films in the genre way. So I definitely respect it for what it symbolizes. And I definitely know that a lot of its shortcomings is usually sourced to the lack of resources that genre cinema even has in Latin America. But speaking objectively as a film, it's just not good. To me, it's just not good. I would rewatch it in Spanish to see if maybe I can gain some cultural something from it, because the dub really threw me off.
The dub's really good.
The dub's so bad.
I see the thing is now I love the dub, that it would hurt me to watch the original.
It would hurt you to participate in the actual.
Exactly. I want to watch the most challenging version, which is the dub with the subtitles that are different from the dubbing.
You didn't survive 10 minutes.
I know.
You didn't survive 10 minutes.
I think that is a true.
But it's interesting. I'm surprised that you liked it so much that you wanted to keep
me too.
It.
Number five.
Right. Okay, so that's we'll call that number 10, because I think if that's on the list, that has to be number 10.
Below you. Okay, I see how this works.
Yeah. Okay, I think for my list, what I would put at number five is actually Battle Royale.
All right.
So Battle Royale. Have you ever seen Battle Royale?
It's one of those classics that I missed.
Okay, so Battle Royale is a 2000 Japanese film. It's horror adjacent. It's the only one on my list that I would call horror adjacent. Only, you know, it's funny. I saw this film, I think, in 2001. So I was about 10 or 11. I was really young when I saw it. I really was. I do remember that.
Now, how did you see it in a theater? Did you see it on video?
No, I didn't see anything. I saw it in video. So okay. It was really beginning of the internet. I actually don't want to lie.
Did you download it?
I'm pretty sure I was 13. No, I watched it. I had a couple of online friends at the time. There were also teenage girls that liked horror films. They were. Actually, I'm not going to lie to you, but my first friends online were not teenage girls. Yeah. They were grown men. I would always lie about my age online.
Oh my God.
I would always say that I was 25. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But mainly because I realized as soon as I went into those chat rooms that everyone was so much older. And I knew, even as a 13-year-old, I knew that me saying I was 13 was weird.
Yeah.
But I didn't have friends in school. I was a really big loner. I grew up as an only child. So I went online. That's how I really got into movies first, just going into MSN chat rooms. Eventually, I did legitimately find some other teenage girls. And one of them had told me about Battle Royale. So I think by then it was 2004. So it had been a couple of years after it had been released. And Battle Royale was a really big phenomenon when it was released. I mean, so much so that it's pretty unanimous that Suzanne Collins, the woman who wrote the Hunger Games novels, directly ripped off the story of the Hunger Games from Battle Royale. But I think that that's important to mention because when I was 13, the Hunger Games wasn't yet a thing. So to me, Battle Royale was truly like a deep horror film because Battle Royale, for those that don't know, is about a program that a dystopian Japanese government does every year where they take a group of students from the Japanese schools and they're like 16, 17 years old. They take them to one of the Japanese islands, and then it's a kill for all until only one is left. And like brutal, brutal death.
Yeah, like, I remember really this movie. I never saw it, but it's been talked about and people would always talk about it like, oh, it's good, but oh man, it's brutal. Like that was always with it, is this aura of this is the most violent.
And it is. But
does it still hold up or is it?
It does. No, it does. Yeah. Especially when you compare it to the Hunger Games. Like that's what I feel like the Hunger Games almost sanitized this premise.
Yeah.
Because now looking back at Battle Royale, I'm not sure if I could even call it horror adjacent. But back when I was a kid, it was like unanimous to me that it was a horror film because these were kids that were my age being killed in the most brutal ways by each other, you know, and some of them are friends in the movie and some of them commit suicide. It's a really beautiful and intense film. And actually, I'm not even gonna lie to you, I like the first Hunger Games book. I did watch all of the movies. Mm-hmm. I kind of like some of the mythology behind that world, but overall it really did sanitize and wash the controversy of what Battle Royale was that now it seems to have kind of lost its meaning.
Yeah.
But just so we keep this in mind, like Battle Royale was banned from the United States for a couple of years. Like United States distributors refused to pick it up because they thought it was too violent.
Like, yeah, we don't dig that kind of violence here in the United
we don't
States.
Do mass shootings yet, right? Right.
Although we probably had, but
it was 2000, it was right around Columbine time.
That's right. Was it like before or right after? I feel like that timing was a part of that, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, this film has kind of had such an aftershock in America. It's one of Quentin Tarantino's favorite films, but he didn't list it as his favorite film until like 2009. So almost 10 years after it had been released.
Why do you think that is?
I think it kind of just took that much time for it to catch on. Like, I think it was a huge thing in Japan when it was first released. It was like this big controversy, but Japan really gave it a lot of love. It became a manga. I think there even was a sequel, but the sequel is known to be really bad. I never saw the sequel. The director of this movie died, I think, in post-production. So the Whoa. Movie was done.
Huh.
But he died during post-production. I think his son directed the sequel.
Okay.
And so that's why a lot of people... I never Not saw it, so it, I huh? can't say it. But I love this movie because Japanese films, when we think of Japanese horror, we think of, you know, very specific imagery. And I think that is the bulk of what we can describe as J-horror. But I think the really beautiful thing about Battle Royale is it's a horror movie centered on the dystopian of being a young kid in a government that doesn't care about you.
Yeah.
And then using the own government ideals to turn on each other. And the movie is gory. It is still straight up gory. I think if it was remade now, it would be more gory. But even for 2000, it's still pretty gory. Like, you see knives, cut up kids and things like that. But I really just love how cohesive this film is. I love it's going to be 20 years soon wow. since it was released. And I have watched bits and pieces of it over the last year to teach it to my kids, and I stand by it. It's so good, and it really did start a trend, so a lot of props to Battle Royale.
Do you think, for someone who's never seen it, who has consumed Hunger Games content, do you think, should I watch it?
Oh, absolutely. I think it doesn't even compare. I think because it's such a tour de force and it's so well made. Like, it's not cheap. It's not. It's just, it's dark. It's brutal. And it's funny. I'm even seeing Gen Z. I follow a couple of Gen Z kids on Twitter just because, like, naturally it just happens.
Yeah.
And they've been repurposing the Battle Royale infomercial to make jokes on Twitter now. And I'm like, man, that's good, because the Battle Royale infomercial is amazing. So they open the film with the last successful Battle Royale, where it was this little 10-year-old girl that was the last one standing.
Uh-huh.
And it's this really iconic shot of this little girl in a pink dress, drenched in blood, holding a teddy bear, smiling maniacally, yeah. you know? And then right after they show you that, they show you the Battle Royale infomercial, and it's like this J-pop thing where she's nice. Doing like a dance routine, but literally doing choreography as to how to kill people. So they did choreography about like shooting and killing each other, but it's with bright colors, and it's just a masterpiece. It really is one of my favorite films ever. I think around this time, Suicide Club came out, which was another Japanese film. And I think that one is super dark and definitely a horror. And it's different. It's about packs of teenagers that are killing themselves together, not killing each other, but rather dying together. Mm-hmm. And I actually teach that one for my Japanese horror class, because it shares a lot of the same things as Battle Royale does, and it's done really well. I think I'm a big fan of J-horror, and I think if I had to choose my crown jewel out of it, I would actually choose this one before any of the ghost movies. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see if there's any other ghost movies on these lists here.
Okay, so that was number 9.
Your mind.
Number 8.
That was your 9. I don't know. I don't like this counting system, because that means I'm going to be number 2. You know, it's weird.
No.
I'm going to stay with my system. I'm number 4 here. And this is another... Oh, no. Okay, number 4.
Aterrados.
I swear to God, I can speak more Spanish when I don't have a microphone in front of me. Sorry about this.
Aterrados.
Aterrados. Okay. Which is terrifying.
Argentina. Yes, terrified.
Yeah, Argentina. I can't pull the director off the top of my head. I didn't write it down here, but it is cool.
I think it's Damien something. Yeah.
Really, really cool. And I can't remember scene for scene this movie quite as well as some of the other ones, but I remember how I felt when I watched it, and it was scary at parts. It was fun. There was some tension. And there are some parts to this movie that are really unique that I haven't seen before, just not as familiar with. So I would definitely would watch this one again, and I'm excited to watch it again. Partially because I just don't remember all the beats. But I think that they were really good. So number four, Aterrados.
Very cool. Yeah, Aterrados was a good one. It's definitely one where I can say it's just not my Latin American bias going for it. I think I'm really excited to see what a remake does with it, even though I'm apprehensive what the American remake is going to look like.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that there are very interesting aspects to that film. And we discussed the first time just how things constantly shift and how it goes. I think if anything, the worst part about that film might be the effects. Like the effects were kind of a little goofy.
Yeah.
But I still think it was super effective. I think it is something that should be screened and talked about more often. We just reached out to the Argentinian embassy to possibly do a screening of it there. And I hope we're able to, because I think this is a film that it's also like something that's also kind of good. And I have this complaint actually with a Chilean film that I haven't wanted to discuss. But a lot of times the movies get traction in the United States tend to be really shock gore kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like there's this Chilean film that has like a lot of rape and trauma. It's called Trauma, and it's from few years. And it did well on the festivals over here, but it did well because a lot of the reviews were like, this is one of the most shocking, gory films you'll ever see. Whereas I feel like Aterrados didn't rely on that. It really relied on its story.
It's just loaded in the front of it. And it was just really one moment that I think is kind of hyper violent. But then they let the story.
That was the beginning scene, out. Right?
Yeah. But to see that at the beginning, I definitely thought, oh boy, this is going to be a whole ride of this.
I think it's a misnomer, right? It's almost like It Follows. It Follows is probably my favorite American horror film, and we'll
spoiler
talk about that.
We're gonna have episode. Yeah, maybe.
But that movie starts off with one of the most violent, or rather one of the most like gory things I've ever seen. And I was like, oh great, this is going to be effing gore the whole time. And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I felt that way with Aterrados. I agree. That opening scene was brutal. And I was like, oh man, I don't know if I can handle like,
yeah,
but it used it effectively.
It's a good way to use it because it does put me on edge.
It did.
Whereas, and it also does something that I'll mention for some of these other things. It makes me turn off from the movie a little bit, and just in the personal not liking it as much. But then whenever I go from not liking a movie initially to liking it more, like when it wins me over, then oof, I end up really, really liking it.
Yeah.
My top five is kind of some some of the runts that it just like I didn't think I was going to like, but then really ended up sticking with me.
No, I agree with that one. I think that's a good choice. Aterrados has definitely been one of the finest finds that we've had. And you saw it in Spain.
I saw it on a plane on my way to Spain. You saw it
on a plane. And Clinton was like, oh, it's on Netflix. And then when I went to check, it's not on American Netflix, but it was on Spanish Netflix. Oh, sorry. It's only if you're
staying in Barcelona.
Barcelona,
correct.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good choice.
Thank you. What you got for us?
So my number four, I'll stick with the same language.
Thank you.
But we're going to do Wreck. Have you ever seen Wreck?
Is this W-R-E-C-K?
R-E-C.
No. Oh, as in record.
As in record.
I've seen the box art for this, but I don't know what it is.
This is probably my favorite foreign horror franchise, hands down. Because
where's this from?
This is from Spain, and you know how I feel about Spain.
Yeah.
But I think it's these films are a masterpiece. I think that especially the first two ones should be discussed more. They are discussed pretty often, but
how many of these are there?
There are four.
Okay.
So Wreck is about a virus that takes over this really tall, like, apartment building. And I think it's Barcelona, actually. A really tall apartment building in Barcelona. And they're essentially quarantined. And then slowly everyone gets infected. But I think, obviously, you hear that premise and you're like, yeah, okay, like, we've heard it before. But the really unique thing about Wreck is that there are four of those films, right? And the first one takes place within the same, like, 2 hours. Then the second one takes place right after the first one ends. So it's, like, really continuous. Mm-hmm. So in a way, you can technically watch these two films back to back, and it's more like a four-hour movie. Then Wreck 3 is the prequel. So it talks about how the virus was formed. And then Wreck 4 picks up right after Wreck 2. And so over the course of all of these, so it's like a really continuous storyline.
6 years or something, 7 years this all happened.
I think the films were released over 7 years. Do these break
the sequel traditions of, you know, not living up to the original? Do they feel like...
Each one feels different, which is what I really love about it. Wreck 1 and Wreck 2 are very similar in tone and style because it's more or less the same characters and it's more or less the same progression, but you do learn more about the virus. So I think the actual really interesting thing too about Wreck is that they approach possession movies through zombie movies. So the whole folklore behind Wreck movies is that possession is an infection that you get from a literal bacteria. So you're both possessed and you're also a zombie. And I thought that was super interesting. There hadn't been that twist before. And what I really like is that you do have the same main antagonist for all the four films. She starts off as your protagonist, but then it evolves over the four films.
Ooh. Wait, yeah. She starts off as the protagonist and then she becomes the antagonist?
Yeah, that happens in the first one, which I guess is a spoiler, but I don't think it's that much of a spoiler because there are sequels and you have to know the premise of the sequels.
Yeah.
So in 2 and 4, she's an antagonist. Okay. But some people still view her as a protagonist. So it's a really fun film that plays around with genre tropes. It plays around with storylines.
Is it fun or is it dark?
It's not necessarily like funny har-har.
Yeah.
But it's found footage. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's all found footage. That's another thing. Really? I think the only one that's not found footage is Wreck 3 because Wreck 3 is a prequel movie. And so they literally show it like a normal film.
Yeah.
But Wrecks 1, 2, and 3. That's why it's called. I'm sorry. Wrecks 1, 2, and 4. That's why it's called Wreck, R-E-C.
Which of these is Wreck 1 on your list here?
Yeah, Wreck 1 is on the list. I think it's probably the easiest to gauge. I think I like Wreck 2 the best.
Okay.
Because Wreck 2, you start off, the first 5 minutes of Wreck 2 is the last 5 minutes of Wreck 1, like literally. They recap Wreck 1 for you as you do Wreck 2. And I think with that recap, you could just get straight into the action. Whereas with Wreck 1, you're building the world.
Yeah. The origin story.
Exactly. Thing. So I'm putting Wreck 1 as my number 4. But in general, I think that these films are best to look at as a franchise. I recommend all four of them.
Yeah.
They're all four really good. I think it ends on a good note. I think they're scary. I think they're still scary. It's 2007. And yeah, no, I really like these films. And I think you have to know I'm very picky.
Yes.
They have to be very good for me to like them this much. But I really do like them.
That reminded me, I think at some point we should also do a top 10 list for horror movie franchises. Because I have some that I liked. And I like the whole franchise more than any one individual movie.
Interesting.
But we'll do that.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. Okay, cool.
All right, so we ready for number 3?
Your number 3. What's your number 3?
My number 3 is Les Garçons Sauvages in the year 2017. The American title, Wild Boys. This is a movie directed by...
Wild Boys? Really?
Yeah, I know.
Over at the Gravos?
Over what?
at the Gerados? I'm surprised.
So for me, Wild Boys is the least horror-ish movie on the list. I think there could be a case to make this not even horror.
It's horror adjacent. I think it's horror adjacent as Battle Royale. Yeah. I think it's fair.
Okay. I don't know if when I see this movie for the second time, I'm going to hate it, like totally turn on this movie. But I do want to see it again. It's so weird and it's campy in a lot of ways. And it has this old school vibe to it, or pastiche thing going on. Is that the right word? Pastiche?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm really, really curious and excited to watch this again. I think the weakest, what I would like, I would be most interested to see this movie if it was made by a woman. And I think that's what holds it back for me.
Yeah.
Is the entire message and motivating, the entire creation of this.
Right.
Is kind of highly questionable.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of potentially, I don't know, harmful things maybe in this movie.
I think it's problematic. But
I want to see cultural.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's and that, right. And how much of it is cultural and how much is.
Right.
But yeah, I would love to see this movie. If this movie was made by a woman and an all female cast.
Right.
That would put it over the top for me.
Yeah.
As it stands, it's straight up the weirdest movie I've seen that I also was entertained by.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I really didn't enjoy it, but I have a really big problem with French films. That's why Knife Plus Heart, mm-hmm. I was so surprised. I loved it so much because I was like, wow, I get this one.
Yeah.
This one resonates with me. Wild Boys was just too provocative for the sense of being provocative for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's easy to admire for all the reasons that you listed. And I can see how you did like it.
Yeah.
And how you would like it.
It's like trashy. But yeah. It's like pretentious trash.
Yeah. You know, and
like,
I think
we're going to do this.
Yeah.
This beautiful shit you've ever seen.
And I think Beltran definitely, that was pretty much like his motivation,
yeah,
to do so. He had mostly come from experimental films, so this was his first like attempt at a narrative.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I'm surprised that you like it so much.
I know.
But
what's wrong with me?
I think that's fair.
I still think like when we talked about it, so we did this on the episode for distribution.
Yes,
and all of mine are on previous episodes, so I'll try to remind listeners where they are. So on the film distribution episode, I mentioned that I thought that if the U.S. government ever clamps down hard,
yeah,
they're going to have a database and they're going to see everyone who saw Wild Boys and they'd be like, all you perverts are going straight to jail.
Oh my God.
I still stand by that. It is provocative.
It's absolutely provocative. But interesting.
Yeah,
wow.
That's my number three.
Okay. My number three is going to be Suspiria,
the remake of it that you love so much.
I did finally see the remake. That was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life.
So you did not like the remake, but you,
the remake
but
the was horrific.
Is on your
the
number
that is
three.
Where we get our name, Horrorspiria. Suspiria, yes,
it's our origin story.
Suspiria, our origin story. Dario Argento. 70s giallo style, but actually technically not a giallo, because remember, giallos are based on crime novels. They usually have that nexus, but the unique thing about Suspiria is that its folklore is around witches.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it starts a trilogy that has one of the craziest movies I've ever seen in my life called Mother of Tears in it. It's the third one, and
yeah.
It's the craziest effing film you'll ever see in your life. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
We're going to watch it one day.
Awesome.
Yeah. So Suspiria, it was one of the very first films I ever saw. It was the very I think it was the first horror film that I saw that I was like, oh, horror films can be beautiful, like visually. Like you could have bright colors and the gore can look like art and things like that. The thing that I really didn't like about the Suspiria remake is that it was gorier in unpleasant and unexplained ways. So, for example, the Suspiria original is 90 minutes long.
Oh, that's a sweet spot.
The remake is 2.5 hours long.
No.
Exactly.
That's the disgusting spot. And it just, like, makes
no sense.
Yeah, and I'm just like they don't use that.
Yeah, they don't. They use it.
You gotta see this. We need to put in another hour.
I don't need to see this woman being contorted for 15 minutes with no. It was just like nothing. It was clear. It was just trying to get like a reaction out of you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not what the original Suspiria did. You know, it was like this tight, stylish. It's about a young girl from New York goes to Berlin to learn how to dance, and that's where she meets the witches and
ballet witches.
Yeah, so there's dancing, there's bright colors.
If you just make a movie, I mean, that's a big swing and a miss. If you have if you try to remake that and you fuck up ballet witches,
yeah, no,
it was insane.
Yeah, it was insane. Yeah, the remake would have like these really weird abusive dance scenes where she was just like beating up the ballet dancer for 15 minutes and then we just move on to the next thing, and I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, especially from a male director. I'm like, in 2019,
who directed this new one?
Luca Guadagnino, who did Call Me By Your Name. And
The Big, that's a big movie.
It was.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That MF-er. I mean, he loves like Woody. He's an asshole.
Yeah.
He loves like Woody Allen. And speaking of French people. So anyway, Suspiria, the original, one of my absolute favorites. It will always be one of my absolute favorites. Landmark DC, the one on E Street, does midnight screenings of it every month. I really want to go to one. Every month.
They like dedicate to Suspiria.
Yeah, they dedicate to Suspiria.
Do people like yell the words at the screen? Like they
no,
do
but you know what's really
show?
Funny? When Delia came to visit last year, she and I were both so shook at that because we love Suspiria so much that we bought tickets. But Delia and I sleep at like 10 o'clock. So it was 10 o'clock and we had to go out to DC. And she and I were like, I don't even want to get my ticket refunded. Let's just not go.
Yeah. I actually wonder how much of the midnight screening economy is just people buying tickets and not going.
Yeah.
You know, like, because that's the
I haven't been in years.
If I get a ticket, I'm getting it at like 7 o'clock or in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. By
that's,
10 o'clock.
That's
it's a different,
seriously what
it's a
happened.
Different world.
Yeah. I really want to do a Rocky Horror one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I used to do those as a teenager. And even though I'm not a teenager anymore, I know that Landmark does it. The theater right next to me does it. But I don't think I would go to one where I live just because I would be horrified of seeing my students. No.
Oh, to see students.
Scared. Yeah. This is such a college area.
Cool. They get to see their professor, you know.
At a queer.
Oh, she's cool. Or maybe not. Oh, she's a nerd.
Yeah, I don't know. But I would go to the one in DC because the one in DC, I feel like I could hide in.
Yeah.
That's something that you have to plan for. Yeah. Whenever I know that I'm going to be staying out past midnight, I'm like, I need like an afternoon nap. I need to make sure that.
A whole routine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so are
Suspiria.
We on number, is the next one number two? Are we already there?
Yeah, we're already on
man,
number two.
Here we go. Have I got out of my troll picks? Let's see. Number two. This one should be pretty obvious.
I don't know.
Do you want to make a guess?
I think if I had to guess, it would. I can't even guess.
The Last Circus, or as it's known in Spain, Balada de Trompeta Triste.
Yeah. I loved that bonus pod of yours. It was a good one.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So yeah, for all the reasons mentioned in the bonus podcast, this is a, according to IMDb, 7 million euro budget killer clown movie. This was the first international horror movie that I can remember watching and really latching onto for the reason of, oh, this could never be made in the United States. Like, whoever funds yeah. you in the United States would never give you $7 million and then get the script back and be like, oh, it's a killer clown movie, but there's also, like, it's historical fiction.
It is. You know? It's about the Spanish Civil War.
Right. Like, they'd be like, okay, but how about we don't do that? And how about we, and Alex de la Iglesia, who's the director, he, like, has this way of changing halfway through the movie, two-thirds of the way through the movie, it kind of starts to change directions and stuff and just yeah. go to different places. And it's unlike any movie I've seen. It's very unique. And, yeah, it just couldn't be made here. They would never yeah. do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't have the guts.
I've done some reading, actually, over the summer on Alex de la Iglesias. He's really well known for using heavy metaphors into really absurd genre cinema. And I admire him for that. I still haven't seen it, but I definitely want to. I definitely want to dig into his other films as well.
Yeah. Still some I haven't seen from him, too.
Yeah.
Some of his earlier stuff. And he's even done some things that aren't horror, that look less interesting, but he's got some good stuff. The one I think I mentioned to on the podcast, The Bar, was on Netflix, probably still is. That's a good entry point because it's crazy, but not killer clown crazy.
Do you like his films because they are so provocative?
I like them. You know, they're provocative, but not overly so.
Okay.
I know I'm going to see stuff that, it's not over the top gore, and it's not over the top sexuality. But I think I like it because I think this is going to be a wild ride.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, no, good pick.
Number two.
I'm surprised that's actually circus. Number two.
Yeah.
Okay. So my number two is actually one that we've seen together. I want to talk about Tigers Are Not Afraid.
I knew it. Yeah.
Yes. So this is one
Tigers
of the...
Tigers Are Not Afraid.
Yes. This is one of the ones that Clinton and I have seen in between breaks. We saw it, I think, about 2 or 3 weeks ago. We saw it in Woodstock, Virginia. Shudder bought up the rights to Tigers Are Not Afraid by
Shudder, the
streaming service.
Yep.
Shudder, we love Shudder. And they did a limited theatrical engagement because it's already
engagement,
now
on, which yeah. is when you release something but you don't, it's only like smaller.
It's like, yeah, it's like very few. Like Bruce Springsteen's about to do an engagement.
Okay. Oh, I wonder who's going to that one.
I'm gonna be the youngest person there.
Oh yeah.
Happily so. Me and your dad.
Oh my gosh.
No. Yes. So we saw it and it was part of this cool thing that Woodstock, Virginia does. They do like a film club and we were like, oh, this sounds so cool. Let's do it. And my goodness, Tigers Are Not Afraid. It was made in 2017, but it's only just been distributed now in America in 2019. And that has to be one of the best horror films I've seen in years. Issa Lopez is such an incredibly strong director. I cried so much. It still had elements of real horror in it. You know, I wouldn't call it horror adjacent or anything. It's straight up a horror movie. To me, it's like a horror fairy tale.
Call it a horror adjacent.
You would call it horror yeah. adjacent? Why?
Well, the horror didn't hit me frequently enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you are heartless. No, I'm kidding. It definitely does have a dramatic, it's almost like a fantasy. But
yeah.
You know what's funny? Pan's Labyrinth, I would say, is straight up a fantasy, even though it's very much based in reality as well. But I think the majority of Tigers Are Not Afraid is based in reality. And you're not sure
yes.
if there are fantastical elements. Like, you're yeah. not sure if, like, an anthropomorphic tiger is ever going to show up.
Yeah.
And you kind of have expect it to.
Yeah.
But it was one of the most sharp scripts I had ever seen on screen. It was beautiful, poetic. I can't talk highly enough about this film. What did you think about it?
I liked, one of the things I liked about it was that, in contrast to some movies I've seen from Guillermo del Toro, that take place in like Spanish Civil War,
right,
or just some other time period, I kind of, this movie made me realize that, or think, like, is it kind of a cop out to do that? Because they're,
yes,
it's so powerful.
It is a cop out.
Yeah, it's so powerful, and you have so many things you could say
that's so direct to Mexico.
Right,
yeah,
just taking place right now and in your location with the people who are suffering today.
Yes.
So yes. I appreciated that bluntness.
Yes.
And that courage to. Maybe it's just harder. Maybe it's harder not to seem heavy-handed or preachy or something.
It's actually more economic than that. A lot of Guillermo's movies that he's known for now have been financed through Spanish production studios. So The Devil's Backbone, which I made you watch for something else, was financed by a Spanish production company as well.
Yeah.
So for him especially, it's definitely playing both sides. Whereas Isa Lopez is absolutely, I think, radical.
Yeah.
It's a radical film. It's made for the time now. On the lore, like a bunch of, like Neil Gaiman has seen this film. And I think I really like his quote because he's like, this is the fairy tale of our times. And I actually completely agree. It felt like one of the most modern things I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it didn't hold back. There is a really... big surprise, I think, in the third act that we both jumped and we were did they just go there?
Yeah.
And it was brutal. It was brutal in a really beautiful way, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but I really loved it. I also wanted to give a shout out to Culture Shock, which is a film that was also released this year, also by a Mexican female director, but it's part of the Hulu holiday horror series. And so she did it for 4th of July. So it's a half Mexican, half American production. And I also wanted to give a shout out because that was another really strong 2019 Mexican lady director killing it and doing better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah,
but
I got to see that. You've said a lot of good things about that Hulu.
Yeah, the whole
series
is really good. They have this, the one for April Fools is my favorite.
Yeah.
It's called I'm Just Fucking With You.
Yeah.
And it's one of the funniest things I have ever seen in my life, but it was disturbing. It was absolutely a horror film as well. So yeah, I rep that.
I would call it horror adjacent.
And I rep Tigers Are Not Afraid, one of the best movies I've seen in a very long time. All right,
now we're on to our number ones. Now I am but a neophyte in this international horror realm.
We know this.
So next, but I think that's kind of fun about a top 10 list, top 5 list, is that it can change, right?
Sure.
So right now, at the top of my list.
Oh, God. Let's wait.
The least troll pick of all of them.
Okay. Drum roll.
Wailing.
Really?
This comes from our Nation State episode. The year 2016.
You know what?
Painfully...
I'm shocked by this.
Are you? Yeah.
Because it was one of the longest films
so
I've given.
So long.
And the first... Listener.
Yeah.
Clinton and I saw It Chapter 2 together. And let me tell you.
That was long. That was long. That was very long. This one was probably even longer.
It's actually longer, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, 2 hours and 36 minutes.
Yes. You wrote it down.
Yeah, to the dot. Gok Seong is what it's called in,
Korean.
I didn't get to translate that, but I should have. Directed by Hong Jin-na.
Uh-huh.
And
damn, you came with facts.
I got to get that out there. what was I going to say?
Why this one?
So, yeah, why this one? I love, like I was saying, if a movie turns me off and then gets me... I'm in love.
Okay.
One of my all-time favorite movies, Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind. I almost walked out of the theater after 10 minutes. I was because Jim Carrey was on screen trying, like, being all mopey and serious. And I was like, F this man. You're a comedian. This stupid, serious acting bullshit.
Range.
And then I sat through it and it, like, totally clobbered me. And I love it. So Wailing is the same way in the sense that when I saw the runtime, I was like, fuck you, May. Fuck this podcast. Fuck this movie. How dare you? I mean, how dare you? 2 hours and 36 minutes. And so I rebelled and I split it up, and because I was determined to watch this and not look at my phone. Because if I started looking at my phone, it would be 2 hours.
I mean, hello, it's a foreign film.
Yeah. So, you can't even get it unless you watch and read the subtitles. This one is so, it's a horror thriller, and it's about a town where a virus something kind of breaks out, and you don't know, they're trying to pin it on the Japanese immigrant, but you don't know if it's true, you don't know what's true. This movie has some iconic scenes. And it's long, but it's worth it. It's worth it.
Yeah. No, I'm honestly so shocked that you chose this. I'm proud of you.
I love this big beast of a movie.
It's character growth.
It has some funny moments too.
I think it's funny. Yeah.
Even though it's a funny movie. To have the range and the, but it's also deeply.
It's deeply disturbing.
Deeply disturbing.
You're also, you never know where it's going. I mean, honestly, and we're going to talk about the ending. Wait, no, you don't.
No,
you never want to talk about the ending.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, you got to make
I'm always so shocked.
That's what keeps you moving through the 2 hours and 30 minutes.
It gets as dark as it does. And not because we know Korean films are dark, but I'm always shocked it goes there because it's profound and it's beautiful in a really dark way. I think it's a beautiful film and I think it has a lot of messages. I think that there's definitely, that's why I chose it for the Nation State episode. I think that there was a lot of different layers to it. And Korea just keeps, they just keep putting out really great hits, man.
Yeah.
The Host was 2006. Before that, Memories of a Murder was 2003. They just found the serial killer from that film too, which is crazy.
In real life?
Yeah. It was known as Korea's Zodiac Killer. And they just found the dude that committed those murders. But weirdly, Korea has a statute of limitations on murder.
No way.
Yeah, they do. So they can't try the guy for the murder, even though, like, he admitted it.
Oh,
it's without a doubt.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like a good movie. And yeah, a terrible reality.
Bong Joon-ho. So the guy that did The Host
did,
and he did that one in 2003. Memories of
a
Murder.
He did a movie. Is it like about fictional?
No, it's about the serial killer.
It's about him straight
up.
Yeah.
But it's considered a horror film. We just haven't seen it for
this
podcast.
How old is this serial killer now?
He's in his 50s or 60s.
Ooh.
Yeah. And he's
better.
He's still
now?
Locked up. No, he's
oh,
locked
he,
up.
Oh, he is locked up.
He
for
is locked up.
Something?
For something else. Yeah.
Okay.
But he can't be tried for this crime. Anyway, but my point is Korea, really, they know how to make these films.
Yeah.
I think that Korea, in general, and we've talked about this, Korean horror films tend to be my favorite of the horror community.
And some of these people, guys are friends, right? The Bong.
Yeah, they're all like Park Chan-wook and that guy.
They all
kind
of hang out. Because I do notice some, they do hit some similar beats with some of the comedy in The Wailing and in The Host.
Yeah, absolutely.
I
also just saw Parasite.
Or-
which is Bong Joon-ho's new one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that one was interesting. I didn't love it as much as I thought I would. I wonder what you are going to think about it.
Yeah. I
especially
don't know if I'm
since
just a
you love
fanboy now.
Oh,
or...
I'm a full fangirl of Bong Joon-ho.
That's my number one.
Go watch The Wailing.
Go watch The Wailing.
All right.
Come
my
back.
My number one is one that Clinton has denied me before. And it made me very sad. But I get my revenge now.
Oh my God, what is it?
Possession, directed by Andrzej Żuławski. And we cut it out of The Monstrous Feminine because we had too many movies.
We did. There was a time when you did the Korean episode, that was a lot. I was looking back, four.
Okay. Yeah.
And one of them was 2 hours and 36 minutes.
And it ended up being your number one.
That's true.
So you know sometimes what? Maybe Possession would have been your number one. Like, it's my number one. Been.
So this was supposed to be in Korean horror?
No, this was supposed to be in The Monstrous Feminine. This is my absolute favorite example of The Monstrous Feminine. And it's just one of the craziest films anyone will ever see. And it's directed by Andrzej Żuławski.
Who's from?
He is Polish.
Where is this? Polish?
But the film is based and shot in Germany. And Isabel Adjani, she was in Nosferatu the Vampire.
Okay.
She was...
I call her Lips.
She does have nice lips, though. Oh, my God. I would call her Lips, too. I love her name, though. Isabel Adjani.
That is good. That's better than Lips.
Yeah, but she's absolutely insane in this movie. She tried to commit suicide after this movie because it was such a dark role for her.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
When was this again?
This is 1981.
81.
So this was around Berlin Wall time. It's very important to the film as well, that type of setting. And so Isabel and Johnny, the dude is Sam effing Neill. Sam Neill, Jurassic Park, Hunt for the Wilder People.
Wait, which character?
The main guy in Jurassic Park. Yeah, who's the name guy?
Jeff Goldblum.
No, that's the doctor. The other guy.
There's another guy?
I think he's with Laura Dern.
Okay.
You know what's really funny, listener? I don't like Jurassic Park. Okay. That's
not funny at all.
I hate Jurassic Park. Okay, I will Google his name. His character's name.
In Jurassic Park.
I think it's Alan Grant, actually, now that I'm thinking. Damn, I got it. Yeah, okay. Alan Grant.
Is the name of the Sam character Neill. In Jurassic Park?
Yeah, it's the name of the character in Jurassic Park.
For a movie you hate.
That was pretty good, I know, right?
Okay, so...
Yeah, so Sam Neill and Isabel Adjani. Okay, so what it's about, it's another movie about divorce.
Okay.
But whereas The Brood, we definitely both agreed that it's, like, misogynistic and things like that.
Yeah, that was pretty silly.
In Possession, it has a strong sympathy with the monstrous feminine. Mm. I don't think it's viewed as abject, even though the stuff that happens in Possession is much more gross than anything that happens in The Brood.
Yeah.
The Possession really goes there in the sense that you can watch Possession in 2019 and you're like, am I actually watching X happen to X? You know what I mean?
X happen to X? What do you mean?
I don't want to spoil it.
Is this real?
Yeah,
like,
because...
Did they really make the actors, like, choke each other kind of thing?
That's like tame.
Yeah,
tame compared to what they do in this film.
Yeah.
But it really... It's so well acted. It embodies that madness so greatly. And it's honestly iconic. Selena Gomez did a tribute to it with one of her music videos.
Oh my God.
You know, it's...
Which one?
Fetish, actually.
Ooh,
with Gucci Mane. Yeah.
Hmm.
It's a... I
should see the movie first.
You should. I have it on Blu-ray.
Ooh. Wow, yeah.
It's excellent. I'm not going to lie to you. If there's one that I impress on all of you watching from here, it is that one. It portrays the breakdown of sanity, the breakdown of existentialism, the breakdown of a relationship mm-hmm. so well.
Yeah.
And it still feels really fresh and traumatic. And I really love it. And I wish that people would study it more. I think it's such a great find.
Yeah.
And I highly recommend it.
All right. Is it a bummer?
Define bummer.
What do you feel during the movie and after the movie?
I think during the movie, It's absurd.
It is.
It's absurd.
Okay.
It's definitely intense. You know, they're definitely abusing each other.
Okay.
But it's also stylized and kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I really love that kind of it's not a giallo. And it's not even close to a giallo tonally. Like, it makes more sense than one. But it definitely, like, there's almost a science fiction element to it. And then there's this really romantic story behind it.
Huh.
Then there's, like, the horror aspect. And I think it's one of the films where you never know what to really expect next.
Yeah.
And
that's
then,
one of my favorite things about international horror movies.
Yeah. And I think my colleague watched this one because I wanted to teach it for the Monstrous Feminine.
Yeah.
And she was like, yep, yeah, you know, it's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
Really?
And this is like, you know, someone that's watched her fair. She's a film scholar as well.
Yeah. You guys must see all sorts of kind of crazy shit.
Yeah. So yes, Possession, I think it's so underrated. I think everyone should be studying it. I teach it for my classes. I can't wait for my class to watch it and for them to hate me.
Yeah.
But either way, you have to see it. Everyone has to see it.
All
it
right.
Is the best.
Possession.
Possession. And it's in English, even though it's pretty cross-cultural, but it's in English.
All right, cool. Now I got some more movies to watch.
Yes, sir. This was fun.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
I feel good.
I feel good.
I do feel like I've got some more movies to watch. Now you mentioned possibly doing a top 10 list on American horror. How are you feeling about that?
I feel like that's what we'll do next. So next we'll be going over American horror films. Spoiler alert, It Follows will definitely be on
someone's list.
But we talk so much, we focus so much on foreign stuff. I think it would be cool to actually rank stuff from our homeland because there are a lot of options.
Yeah, there are. There are. And I'm going to bring a fair amount of trash to the
I believe. I actually completely believe that Clinton has seen more American trash than I have because I'm so picky.
Oh, really?
Have you ever seen a movie called Bad Biology?
No.
So that's probably one of the weirdest American ones I've seen. It's definitely not going on my list. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Okay.
But it's about what?
That would be a perfect troll pick.
It's about a woman with two vaginas and a man with seven penises, and they get together. But it is straight up a horror. So.
All right. Yeah. I don't know why I haven't seen this.
Bad Biology. It is. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice. Yeah. So we want to thank you all so much for coming along on this ride. We're really excited for season two. We're going to do another one of these list things. And then, I think we're going to start exploring new topics. Always explore nations as we do. But, you know, it would also be really exciting to look at horror films through different filmmaking techniques or different themes like the nation state. So I think you all should be hype about what we have planned next.
Yeah, it's never going to be boring.
Absolutely.
We're talking about, we're like, should the next season, should we like
make should we it, suck?
Yeah, like bad.
Should we suck?
But we decided not to.
We decided not to, no. And that's at cause of me, listener. No, I'm kidding.
Save the day.
All right. Well, we hope that you have a spooky October, and we'll be catching you on the wave soon.
Bye.